Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and in the next 2 half-hour segments, it's my honor and privilege to be visiting once again with Mike Rupert, a former LAPD narcotics detective who for 20-plus years now has been doing his very best and at considerable expense and pain to himself to expose those elements of our intelligence community that have been complicit in drug trafficking. Mike Rupert, welcome once again to our airwaves.
Dave, it's a pleasure to be here.
Now, we have been speaking in our last couple of visits about a very important lawsuit that is currently winding its way through the U.S. legal system, and that is the lawsuit of Bill Tyree. Can you tell us briefly about Bill Tyree, Operation Watchtower, and Operation Orwell, by way of review for people that have not heard those programs?
Okay. Bill Tyree is a former U.S. Army Green Beret who participated in missions known as the Watchtower missions run out of Panama in 1975 and 76, in which infamous Ed Wilson, working for Tom Clines of CIA, directed Special Forces troops into Panama to plant radio beacons so that planes full of cocaine could fly below radar and land undetected at Albrook Field in Panama, where they were met by the likes of Manuel Noriega, Ed Wilson, and Michael Harari of the Mossad. These were classic CIA operations. There were, I think, there were 30-some flights in one batch of mission. There were, I mean, this was a regular ongoing thing. Point in fact here is that George Bush was the director of Central Intelligence during the tail end of the Watchtower missions. Tyree later transferred to Fort Devens, Massachusetts, with the 10th Special Forces Group Airborne. And there he was involved in what came to be known as the Orwell, Operation Orwell, which was a massive domestic surveillance program designed for one of its purposes was to keep the secrets of the Watchtower missions, which really led directly to massive importation of drugs by CIA. This continued. Orwell was in full progress through 78 and into 79, involving wiretaps and blackmail of public officials and a great many other nefarious activities. Also, a lot of theft and a lot of other skullduggery. Bill Tyree was losing his stomach for the work. He was married. His wife, Elaine, was also in the Army.
She was informing for the CID, was she not?
Eventually, she did start to do that. She started to keep a set of diaries, became an informant for Army CID at Fort Devens. And she was murdered, and Bill Tyree was framed for the murder of his own wife. I mean, A&E did a documentary recently in June of this year, Murder at Fort Devens, and very surprising to see the trial judge in the case, Judge Gilliam, saying, I really believe Bill Tyree is innocent. You know?
And by the way, CID is what?
Army Criminal Investigation Division.
Okay, go ahead.
In spite of mounds and mountains of evidence, which I publish in a set of documents I have called the Tyree Papers, all about these operations and support documents, that Tyree did not kill the murder, that another guy named Earl Michael Peters did, that there were witnesses showing Tyree wasn't there. There was a whole massive cover-up and conspiracy. The case was transferred to the Massachusetts Judicial Supreme Court. No one else can hear the case. And Bill Tyree's been in prison now for almost 20 years for a crime he did not commit. As a result of information which has surfaced, as a result of many people working on his behalf, I'm just one of them, within the last couple of years, hard evidence has shown, and this lawsuit of $63 million filed in Massachusetts, charges that George Bush, who was director of CIA, not in 79, but after the Tyree murder, ordered Albert Vincent Caron, who I also have written about, a CIA bagman who wound up working for Oliver North during Iran-Contra and directly for Bill Casey, to retrieve the diaries of Elaine Tyree. We've got those links established. There are court judgments in Massachusetts over illegal seizure of those diaries by Massachusetts authorities, which we already have on our side. So the suits against CIA, George Bush, and this suit has recently just added Oliver North and William Jefferson Clinton as defendants, in the suit. I haven't got all the details on that yet, but they are officially in the suit. I know Oliver North is there because of his direct hands-on drug dealing and his connections to FEMA and the National Security Council. So it's a big suit, and I think what I've been hearing a lot, and I don't know if you have, but you know, you're extremely well plugged in, and I'm pretty well plugged in too. People first of all ask about what's the difference between this and the Christic suit, which flopped. And there's a huge set of differences here. First of all, there's a large body of evidence which the Massachusetts government has already admitted to, and that is the fact that these diaries existed.
That is to say the Carone diaries, or rather the diaries of Bill
Elaine
and Lane Tyree.
Right, that these diaries existed, that they were illegally removed from the property, and they have thus far refused to comply with an order to return them, and we know why they can't, because Al Carone, the CIA agent who lived in New Mexico, picked up the diaries and later turned them into CIA, and he was doing so on the orders of George Bush, and that's what this suit alleges.
Now, we should stress that since you and I have last spoken on the air, Oliver North and President Clinton have been added as defendants.
Correct.
I should stress that I am not among President Clinton's vehement critics, although I have no illusions about the man. I have viewed him, as the title of the Reed Cummings book stated from the beginning, as compromised by the MENA operation. I also stated on the air when he, within a couple of days of being elected, tried to open up the military to gays that I thought he would be destabilized, leaving aside the merits of the issue itself, and this should in no way be misinterpreted as homophobic. He was waving the red flag at the ultimate bull, so to speak, and I predicted that he would be destabilized, and I believe he is. I voted for the man twice, although, as I said, I have no illusions about him. It seems to me that he has had a bad rap with regard to a lot of the things he has done. At the same time, though, I think that the Tyree suit is addressing the things that Bill Clinton should have been held to account for before he ever got elected.
Amen. I mean, it's a very telling point here that Bill Clinton, and you know, my opinion based upon the evidence I've seen and the people I've talked to over the years and the research I've done, was involved in an operation which moved $40 million a month in cocaine through MENA, Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
But that was a CIA operation. You cannot orchestrate a CIA operation from the governor's mansion in Little Rock. It's ludicrous to believe that Bill Clinton was the prime architect of that, but he was criminally culpable, and there were a great many things. Gary Webb, in his wonderful book, The Dark Alliance, documented how Webster Hubbell, who was Hillary's partner in the mm-hmm. Rose Law Firm, negotiated all of the CIA contracts for Contra support at the MENA airport.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a direct link to Bill Clinton there. Leaving that aside, it's kind of hard to believe, and nobody I know who's out in the forefront on the CIA drugs issue, not Gary Webb, not Mike Levine, not Terry Reid, not me, not Sally Castillo, anybody, none of us are saying that Bill Clinton is the prime architect, and you really don't hear all of us saying, get Bill Clinton at any cost, because truly what we're afraid of is that, like with some organisms out there, if you don't cut off the head, it's going to come back and bite you.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to emphasize that because as we're speaking on the night of October 18th of 1998, for the benefit of people who hear this program on tape, the firestorm around Bill Clinton has been mounting to a crescendo, and I don't want the vitally important information that you've been bringing forward and that I've been accessing as a reporter and analyst to be confused with what's going on now in Washington.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, though, he certainly was, in my opinion, rather like a low-level mafioso doing the bidding of Capo George Bush, whom I frankly view as the de facto first five-term president of the United States we've ever had. Two of Reagan's, one of his own, and two of Clinton's.
Yeah, well, that, and he may have one yet of his sons.
Yeah, well, we'll see what develops with regard to that. Now, a few more elements of review about the Tyree suit for the benefit of people that had not heard our first couple of discussions. Now, the diaries of Elaine Tyree were retrieved for the Central Intelligence Agency by Albert Vincent Carone, as fascinating a political animal as I've ever come across in a quarter of a century of research. Tell us more about him, if you would.
He was an amazing individual, and of course, his daughter, as evil as he was, his daughter is probably my closest friend in the whole world.
So, and that is Dee Ferdinand.
That's Dee, yeah. Al Carone came out of World War II and went into the New York Police Department in 1946. When Al Carone's daughter, Dee, got married in the 60s, late 60s, early 70s, there were two separate rooms. One room was for the NYPD brass. The other room was for Santos Traficante, Pauly Castellano, Joe Persilia, some of the largest names in the organized crime world. At the same time, and all in the same time, Albert Carone was also a CIA agent working undercover in the NYPD, and this is, of course, the same model by which I got exposed to CIA drug dealing. I've never worked for CIA, but they wanted me to do that, and I come from a CIA family. So I understood the model. Caron held the rank, eventually the rank of full colonel in the U.S. Army, which was also a sheepdip rank to cover his CIA activities, but he would frequently leave duties at NYPD, hop in his Army uniform, have an armed driver show up who would drive him to JFK, where he would board a U.S. Army helicopter and go off on secret missions all over the world. He was the CIA's prime bagman. He was the paymaster, and it turns out that he was the paymaster for the Watchtower missions and for the Orwell missions, and he was Oliver North's chief bagman during Iran-Contra. I have held this man's personal phone book in my hands. In that phone book, I find the home address and telephone number for William Casey in Locust Valley, Long Island. On the same page is the home address and telephone number of Paulie Castellano, who at the time was the head of the Gambino crime family. Al Caron was a heavy dude, and he was involved in some of the dirtiest operations you can ever imagine. There is an affidavit just filed by me, but also there's a large section of the lawsuit which is pertains to this fact, that Al Caron was in Dallas, Texas, meeting with Jack Ruby on November 21st, 1963.
And also, one of the affidavits states that he told his family that he was also on a rooftop in at Love Field in Dallas with a rifle to kill Kennedy even before the motorcade got underway.
But he couldn't get a shot off, that's correct. Now, what's interesting is, and I have filed a supplemental affidavit in the case, I have a source who I will not name now, and since I'm a publisher, I'm covered on that. But I have a source who is a respected journalist, been around for a long time, who had written chapters for a book back in 1990, sent to his publisher in 92, before I met the guy. And in those chapters, he describes meeting a guy named Albert Carone, and he always used the Italian pronunciation when he was on mafia work. And he overheard Carone talking about dealings with Jack Ruby, and this wound up in a section of an unpublished book. So there is corroboration for this.
Also, I would another detail I wanted to add is that the legal work, counsel representing Bill Tyree in this case is Ray Coleman, who is a law partner of William Pepper, James Earl Ray's attorney.
Correct.
And the author of the book Orders to Kill.
Yes, and I'll be giving some more updates on the lawsuit in the next issue of my newsletter, which goes out here this weekend.
Now, another aspect of the Tyree suit, and before I get into this, I also want to stress that neither myself nor this station is in possession of any direct information that would incriminate any of these individuals, and as far as I know, none of the defendants in the suit have been convicted of any crimes, and this is not in any way to cast aspersions on the suit or on you, Mike, or any of the people involved in it, but this is simply to state that I'm a reporter and an analyst, not an investigator, and I do not myself have any information in my hands that would prove the allegations that have been raised. And this is in no way to cast aspersions on the suit. This is simply pro forma.
Understood.
Now, one of the aspects of the Tyree suit that I wanted to get into last time, but we ran out of time, was the mortality that has surrounded individuals who were involved with allegedly involved with Operation Watchtower and Operation Orwell. Now, one of the papers that figures in the Tyree papers that you have made available is something called the Cutolo Affidavit. If you could tell us a little bit about Colonel Ed Cutolo, who he was, and about this affidavit.
Ed Cutolo was the full colonel, commanding officer of 10th Special Forces Group Airborne at the time that Elaine Tyree was murdered. He was Bill Tyree's CO.
Mm-hmm.
He had also been in Panama, connected to 7th Special Forces, and participated in some of the Watchtower missions for the cocaine flights. That's how he knew Tyree, and that's how Tyree got transferred into Fort Devens, because he had been part of both operations. Cutolo... he didn't, but he did, and this is one of the enigmas here. The Cutolo affidavit, I have to start off by saying, is one of the strongest living documents that I have ever seen. Living in that, every year something new comes up to corroborate something that's written in this affidavit. That being said, I need to say that Ed Cutolo didn't write it, and yet his signature appears on it. The reason why I know he didn't write it, and I was with a retired Army CID investigator, Bill McCoy, at a conference I sponsored on some mysterious deaths in the military in 94, late 93, actually. And it dawned on me that Cutolo had referred to the Panamanian Defense Forces repeatedly throughout the course of the affidavit. Well, they were not so named until well after his death, which I believe was in 1980. They were the La Guardia Nacional at the time of his death and had not been renamed PDF. So it was kind of interesting. What we strongly suspect happened was that Ed Cutolo had prepared a doomsday package of extremely detailed information along with signature blocks to various persons inside the National Security Agency, which is the place from whence the affidavit originated into the public world. And that after his murder, the document was released by a man named Paul Neary, who sent it to Colonel Beau Greitz. And I got my copy of it in 1992 when it was released, I think in late 91, through a POW mother, Jean Ray, who had gotten it from Beau.
And then, by the way, this is also not necessarily to endorse the, in fact, not to endorse some of the political associations that Beau Greitz has maintained with people like David Duke, the Liberty Lobby, et cetera. I simply want to add that as a parenthetical element. Continue, Mike.
Yeah, no. It's just a fact. This is just the way it happened. You know, I've met Beau a couple of times, and personally, as a man, I liked him. I absolutely did not agree with some of his political viewpoints, but I found him to be basically an honorable guy trying, to, in his way, to make the world a better place.
Gary Webb gives him kudos in Dark Alliance in the book, too.
Yeah. You know, and I wish him well in his recovery after recently shooting himself. You hate to see anybody who's tried and sacrificed suffer. And interestingly enough, if I may digress for one second, a friend of mine who was a Black Panther, who has been an activist for 30, 40 years, when he heard that Beau had shot himself, just said, "Oh my God, I hope he gets well." So there was a measure of respect, you know, for the efforts Beau had made to expose CIA drug trafficking and various other crimes.
Yeah, and I echo that respect. Now, speaking of recovery, recovery is something that Colonel Ed Cutolo did not do.
No, he had a traffic accident in England, but he was one of five colonels: Cutolo, Bayard, Malvesti, Rowe, and Baker. All mentioned in the Cutolo affidavit, all connected in one way or another to Watchtower, who turned up dead over the space of about 4 or 5 years.
As did Paul Neary, the National Security Agency operative.
Of cancer, yes. And I have a source, and I have indicated in my affidavit for the Tyree case that while living in Washington in 94 and 95, I met various NSA people, one of whom in particular had worked with Paul Neary and absolutely confirmed that there was a Paul Neary in NSA, and so on and so forth. I will divulge more information about that if I'm sworn and placed on the stand. So we know there was a Paul Neary, but there were deaths all over the place connected with this. You have the five Special Forces colonels. There was a Congressman, Larkin Smith. There was John Newby, a sergeant, I believe, who died. Larkin Smith died in a freak plane crash.
Also, a chief warrant officer, Hugh Pierce.
Also mentioned in there are the murders of Archbishop Romero, which is a major case, and that was connected to Roberto Dobuisson of the infamous Nazi death squads in Salvador. So there's dead bodies turning up connected with this affidavit all over the place, or at least the events described therein.
One of the things that I think needs to be emphasized in this regard is that we're not being morbid here or sensationalistic, but rather simply from the standpoint, from an actuarial standpoint, this is very, very significant. These are relatively young men, military professionals. Green Beret, God knows, are in extremely good physical condition, or you don't even qualify and stay in that segment of the military.
Mm-hmm.
And the odds against all of these people dying are enormous. I think from a practical actuarial standpoint, it could be said that unless there was something very, very grave here, and I'm not making a pun, we would not see this mortality in connection with the case. And that in and of itself is proof that there must be a considerable amount of wheat here from a journalistic standpoint, even if there may be some chaff as yet to winnow out. And again, that's not to cast aspersions on the suit in any way. But again, as a reporter, an analyst, not an investigator, it's simply a stance I have to take from a methodological standpoint.
Yeah, but I think if you look at the Cutolo affidavit itself and the Tyree papers, and I have all these available on my website for those who want to read them themselves, you can see a direct connection between mentions of the covert operations connected to drugs and CIA and information being passed about Watchtower and Orwell to various people. They're taking some action on it and then turning up dead. I mean, there is a sequence of events connected to all of these deaths which plays back to Watchtower and Orwell.
Yes, indeed. And I think that it's extremely important to stress that when you see people dropping dead like this, it's something that has to be analyzed and I think figures very prominently into the body of information that argues in favor of the accuracy of the events presented in the Cutolo affidavit and beyond that the events that underlie the Tyree suit.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me reiterate a point that we've already touched on, namely that since we last spoke, Bill Clinton and Oliver North have been added to this suit, the original suit being against the CIA et al., George Bush, and a number of Massachusetts officials.
Correct.
Now, you've stressed that in... This past week, or actually a little over a week ago, Volume 2 of the CIA's internal report about drug trafficking was finally made public. It was initially held back, and you've been going through that and have found some interesting things pointing in the direction of, among others, Oliver North.
Oh, it's... I was talking with my good friend Celerino Castillo, the DEA agent who complained about CIA drug trafficking at Ilopango in El Salvador. And after discussing it with him, we both kind of said to each other, it's Christmas. And what I mean by that is that Volume 2 of the CIA report is utterly damning to the agency. It doesn't reveal everything, but it certainly paints a clear-cut case of conspiracy on the agency's part, first to redefine its own requirements for reporting crimes by its employees, by first of all making a whole list of agents, contractors, and so forth, non-employees, and then making a specific requirement removing narcotics violations from the list of crimes that had to be reported. That report, in a number of cases specifically related to companies called Setco and Deoxa, and a trafficker named Moises Nunez, and a couple of other traffickers, specifically states, and, you know, I have prepared excerpts of this, but it says that in one case they took Moises Nunez into custody after a seizure of 400 kilos of cocaine. They were going to debrief him, and he says, well, I cannot talk to you about this because I've been working for the National Security Council, and I can't talk about the drug trafficking because it has to do with stuff I do for them. The agency cabled back to headquarters in Langley and said, we would like to debrief the guy. And the next day, headquarters cabled back and said, do not debrief him. In other cases, with regards to Setco and Deoxa, the agency specifically lays out cable traffic and makes specific reference to the fact that these companies were funded, subsidized by the Nicaraguan Humanitarian Assistance Office, which was Oliver North's project in the State Department, which reported to him, and where he arranged for these companies to receive hundreds of thousands of dollars in subsidies. When the CIA knew in the case of Setco that it was owned by Juan Ramon Maraballesteros, who was a Class 1 DEA violator, that's the cartel kingpin level, moving tons of cocaine, and the agency says in their report the money was moved through accounts established by Oliver North.
When Moises Nunez was becoming the focal point of an investigation, that investigation was interdicted, according to Volume 2.
Absolutely. It was stopped cold in its tracks. Do not debrief. That was the order from Langley after Nunez had revealed he was working with the National Security Council in relation to the Contras, and that points directly at Oliver North. The agency has left him hanging out like a piece of wet trash here.
And so his expletive deleteds are potentially going to go into the ringer.
Hopefully so. You know, it's kind of funny. In the first issue of my newsletter, I reported what Chip Tatum, who's kind of a well-known, source on this, he's kind of been lying low for a long time now, had said to me that he had gotten a deal to go quietly. Now, Tatum was a guy who, according to him, dealt directly with George Bush and Bill Clinton and Ted Shankly and Barry Seal and so on and so forth. Said that he, part of his deal to go quietly was that Oliver North would take a public fall behind this, and it looks like he may have gotten his deal. Now, I would like to mention, if I may, that this entire report is available for anyone who wants to look at it on the World Wide Web at the CIA's website. I went there myself. They didn't kill me or sabotage my computer. But it's at www.cia.gov, G-O-V. It's a 410-page report. I have prepared 44 pages of the most relevant extracts with commentary and notes, which I have sent by request to Congresswoman Maxine Waters' office. She should have it Monday in Washington. But, you know, this report is everything that I could hope for. It's more than I would have ever hoped for from CIA to reveal about itself. It shows the degree to which they've been cornered. And you could take the Gary Webbs, the Mike Levines, the Sully Castillos, the Terry Reeds, the Mike Ruperts. You can take us all now, if you want to, and forget us. We aren't essential anymore. What the American public and Congress needs to do is just take the CIA report and pursue it for what it is. It's a confession to conspiracy.
And that is actually on the CIA website.
Yes.
And once more, that website?
www.cia.gov. You go into the section for press releases, and then there'll be a press release about the report being released, which leads you directly to the report. It takes about 20 minutes to download.
Okay, and very quickly, once again, because we're near the end of this side, if you could give us your website and the pertinent information for those who do not have access to the World Wide Web about how to get a hold of From the Wilderness, and bear in mind, again, that we cannot mention prices on the air.
I understand. My website is www.copvcia.com, copvcia.com. You can find all the information there on how to subscribe to the newsletter to get back issues, also to get the extracts of the Volume 2 report or the Tyree Papers or the Caron Report or any of the other products that I put out there. If you want to write to me to get information on the newsletter, please mail to Post Office Box 6061-350 in Sherman Oaks, California at 91413. Phone number is 818-788-8791. Almost forgot my phone number. And the fax number is 818-981-2847.
Okay, and that is information about how to get a hold of the From the Wilderness newsletter by Mike Rupert. That concludes this half-hour segment. For Mike Rupert, this is Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.